Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's running commentary, but it's standing commentary, right?
Standing commentary, yet more vaguely injured commentary. As I confront another obstacle to my running career.
The horrible truth is,
do you use that term loosely?
Well, yeah, I hope it doesn't.
Progress, journey.
Yeah, journey's lovely.
Yeah, journey's good.
I think we were all, I know, I was deeply concerned when we set off around Clissold Park last week because you were kind of going, and you were very ginger. And what happened next?
Yeah, it was weird because I'd been doing quite a lot of running. We'd done that park run. It felt great. Again, I was just in that zone where, oh, things are starting to get back to normal again. And then I played tennis. And that was good fun, but it's all twisty, just new twisty turny stuff. And then I played football on the Wednesday, and I felt very stiff in my groin. after that.
So we were very grown up about that.
Yeah, we were really grown up about my groin strain. And then I turned up the next, but I couldn't run for like 3-4 days. And then I turned up to do this, to do the podcast with us, And I kind of felt, and I thought it was going to be okay, but I sort of felt it ping a little bit. I wondered whether it sort of went.
It was a moment
then.
It was
very, very quick, soon into the run. I felt a sudden really sharp pain.
We ran twice around the park, which is only 2 miles, but at the very beginning you went, I said, shall we stop? And you said, no, I'm okay. And,
yeah, I felt a real twang. And I just wonder whether it's pronged, pinged.
No, I think that's gone. I think you've called it. I think it twang.
Yeah, I think it twang.
Definitely twang.
Twunked it. And I haven't been able to run since. And every now and again it pulls when I'm just walking around the house. And I'm going to have to rest it as long as it takes. It's very frustrating.
Yeah.
That's it. It's just, I can only think it must have been the football. And I'm going to have to not play. I'm going to have to accept certain realities. Which are around physical decrepitude.
Yeah, that's right. Well, let's
see. I love running, and we were just getting, you know, that park run, I really enjoyed it, the first one back. It was just really good fun. And I know it was a bit, it's all a little bit different level around speed and stuff, but in terms of effort, it just felt really solid and normal.
Yeah,
do you
well,
know what
you,
I mean?
You just felt like you trained gently to that point.
Just good fun, yeah.
Well, you're going to have to really take care to get your running better, because, you know, you've got some great running ahead.
Absolutely, yeah, totally.
But
totally.
It may, as you say, I mean, you know, you're certain around it, but it's the solid line of no more football.
Yeah, it has to be, yeah. No more football, no more tennis, and just...
And no more funny business.
Just no more funny business. No more messing about. No more laughing in public. No more music. No more kites. Oh, no, that's the Taliban, isn't it?
Talking of me, which we weren't,
yeah.
But talking of parkruns, my story is, well, I also really enjoyed that, going back to parkrun that first day back. And I said before, the next week, I can't go because I'm busy. That's really annoying. Got to the third week of new parkrun on Saturday, and I was like, I'm going to do a long run to the parkrun. Loads of other people got in touch and did.
Yeah.
Our friend Helen did our longest ever run to the parkrun.
Fantastic.
And I set the alarm to run, you know, to include the parkrun in the Hackney Marshes parkrun in the 10 miler.
Yeah.
And it woke up, and it was, and I'd done a gig on the Friday night. It was pouring with rain. And I just went back to bed. I was like, I can't bother with this. It was like the old days.
Isn't it funny how quickly we defer to the old days? But also, I don't know if you felt this, because it's been so long since we gigged. When we do gig, if you have a good gig, I can't get to sleep till
quite
like three.
High.
I can
get to sleep till
about 3 in the morning.
True,
I'm just so unused to that sort of experience.
That's
it
right.
Just
I wasn't, drinking
kind of
or anything.
Messes
right.
my weekend up really. For yeah, a decent yeah. gig. Thankfully, I'm such a bad comic that so rarely happens.
Well, yeah, that's something we'll come back to as well. It's about the shape of weekends going back, like reverting right back. I mean, I almost feel like I'm reverting back to your old weekends, right. Working Friday, Saturday, and getting into Sunday. Yeah. And then, but I did. It must be said that I did go and do my 10-mile run.
Good for you.
And it
fantastic.
Oh my God, it rained so much.
Yeah. It's
so much.
Tricky,
it's those kind of like monsoon-like downpours. Yeah. There were several.
Yes.
I got caught crossing a road at a traffic light, and just so I wasn't running anymore, I was just standing outside a plumbing supplies shop in the heaviest rain I've ever known.
How ironic.
What the hell am I doing
outside
here?
Outside plumbing supplies.
Yeah, the people inside
there's
the shop
a leak.
Said, there's nothing we can do with this. Yeah. And then I ran down into Victoria Park, and like literally it was like a fog. There was so much rain in the air.
Yeah.
And still loads of people. Lovely interaction with all the other runners. There was this one guy, and he was going, making such good pace. I ran twice around the park, and he was running the opposite direction. I saw him about 5 times.
Yeah.
I said, you're shaming me.
It's a funny sort of period at the moment. I think it's a great period. It's like there's so much, things are coming back. There's such an, I'm feeling such an optimism about it and such a buoyancy. The kids are just like, just intoxicated with various plans and new jobs and ideas and stuff. After, it's like the release of a valve, isn't it? There's a giddiness to it. Sometimes there's a bit of danger to it, but there's something really nice about it.
I think the
gigs are great. People coming back.
Exactly.
Just really good fun.
This outpouring of energy for all with
absolutely,
all this good
after
and bad
it's been
about
repressed
it, right.
for so long. We went camping last week. Typically, I didn't really listen when Rachel was saying where we were going to go. I knew we were going to go camping and see our mates. I thought it was going to be like 10 tents in a field and loads of mates. It was about 1,000 tents in Elise's farm near Weymouth. It was absolutely fantastic. It was so brilliant. It was sort of like festival atmosphere, really good fun. The weather was great for 2 days. Then it rained the third day, so we left, which is how we sort of do camping.
Yeah, that's right.
We don't camp when the weather's bad. No. It doesn't make sense. But that coastline around Weymouth, and there was three cruises in port, not travelling anywhere, but lit up the boats at night. It just—it felt like being abroad. It was amazing. The sea was really clear. Swam in the sea every day.
Down there as well.
It just made me so happy to be there. It was just great. I just really, really enjoyed it.
So wait, you were swimming. So it's tennis, it's football, it's
but
swimming.
I could swim. I could. This was post groin. I'd say swim. I could float. I could pre groin, post groin. I can still float in water, head down.
Yeah, great. It makes all the other swimmers feel so relaxed.
Where's Dad? Oh, there he is. Immobile in the sea. But yeah, it was really good.
Nudge me back towards the shore.
And then I did a gig in...
You could send the tug out to bring you back in. Don't tug that.
And then I did a gig in Sandbach. In Cheshire. And it was just really, really good fun. So basically, apart from the general being angry and annoyed about not being able to run, my spirits are fairly high, really.
And also, from that, you know? Talking of Tonkinson troubles, just chatting to George and his eye seems a lot better. Which
his eye seems a lot better. He's off back to play tennis. He's really into tennis. We found out this morning Rudy's got into his course next year, going to be studying urban dance. George has got a job. You know, Bonnie's... You know, it's all good. Ra's got a new job. I've had one good gig in the last 10.
yes,
get in. Things are coming back a little bit, and we're in the sort of pre-Croatia phase of trying not to catch corona and give it to each other.
But talking of Croatia, Vassos is going on holiday to Croatia.
Is he really?
And before doing that, he pre-recorded an episode of Free Weekly Timed where I had a lovely chat with him. Interviewed me about my book, and he's such a nice man.
He's a really nice guy. He's one of the proper nice guys, isn't he?
It was a really nice... you know, obviously it's PR and everything and great podcast crossover and all that. Just one of those nice moments we do leads to nice socials, you know?
Yes, yeah.
And
good
of course we know him. We know he's a good guy, but I haven't spoken to him for a couple of years.
I wonder what he's up to. I sense that Sparta Ultra knocked him sideways a little bit when he said he couldn't walk for a week.
Yeah, but don't you think he just kind of loves that? It's like a rubber ball. He certainly didn't seem in any way less.
He's so fit and strong.
It's just energy pouring off him.
Yeah, ferocious. Yeah, he's brilliant. He's a lovely guy.
We have made a management decision, because Paul can't run today, to address this year's questions and answers. And it's funny, because we actually had all kinds of plans. When it was raining, we were going to get back on the park and walk with the umbrella.
Yeah.
But we're back where we were almost exactly a year ago, answering questions in your back garden. But, of course, the world has changed a lot, so it's a good comparison.
It's become a sort of... it's become almost a yearly sort of AGM, hasn't it?
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, it's a Q&A.
It's a Q&A. Yeah.
Not an AGM.
No, but I mean...
Q-AGM?
But we're having a quagum.
It's like an AQ. We formed a kind of quorum and got a quango together. Yeah, and now we're going to have a kumquat.
Yes. You have no authority here.
No, she'd be a good guest on the podcast. So we've got questions. We're going to get to them because there's absolutely loads. And I haven't... Paul hasn't... I've just quickly collated these.
Do you want to give me a couple of plays? We'll just do it out to half and half. Swapsies.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. Well, why don't we do a handover? I'll jump in with number one and then and we'll try and cross them out so we'll get lost as
that's
well.
That's how you want to do it, mate. That's how you want
to
do it.
Play the sting. Oh, I haven't done a sting. Quick, let's improvise a Q&A sting. It's the Q&A. There we go. Okay, first question from Chris Littlewood. This was the first question that came in. You ready?
Okay, go on then.
Camelback, backpack with bottles, waist pack with bottles, just carrying bottles or other? What's the most efficient way to carry fluids on long runs?
Well, this is your department, isn't it? Because you've actually done this. I've never done this.
Yeah, I actually...
I just throw myself at the Madame Chance and hope.
Yeah, I think that
we're at different levels
on the same scale, which is neither of us want to carry anything.
Yeah.
You don't like to carry a car key when you're running.
No.
And
that's something I'm going to have to deal with the MDS.
And in fact, I feel as we're coming towards ultras, there's more questions about those. I'm really lucky because I already have worked with a hydration vest, but that's because I think we've got to stop, like I was saying the other day, we've got to stop using single-use plastics.
Yes.
Every event I get to, I want them to say, we haven't got any plastic here, no plastic, because it's time to stop.
And
so I got a hydration vest for the London Marathon, and I run that with two, it's an Innovate vest, it's really good, it's really comfy and sort of doesn't wear thin over time, and it straps in two bottles under, sort of on your ribs, sort of in front of your armpits.
Yeah.
And with crossover tubes. And yeah, it's not perfect. They taste a bit like rubber tubes. But they're good. And you can do it. The way to do it is do it carefully. So don't overfill the bottles and not like big cushions. Yeah. And don't have any air in there. So basically, if you put 300 mil in each one, that's plenty for a long run,
right? Yes.
And then put them in the fridge so they stay nice and cold for a while. Stick them in the little slots and have a crossover thing. I did the Yorkshire Marathon and the London Marathon with that, and it was really good.
And you can mix up your potions if you want as well, isn't it? Salts and whatever.
That's right. People are banging into that stuff. If you work with kind of powder fuels that are mixed with water, then of course you can. Like Chris says, it doesn't have to be water. That's fluids. But I'd always, again, coming back to us, we're pretty Luddite. You know what I mean? The very first time we went for a long run, do you remember we went for that 20?
Right.
And I was like, we'll find a shop. And you were like, you've got to be thirsty. I was like, I'll be thirsty later. So we're a bit basic. But I think there's something in that, because I think that one can get a little bit scared. I think that obviously you've got to be careful running in the heat. But sometimes you see people running and they're carrying water in their hands. And I think if you're out running 15 miles, then fair dues. But if you're out running 10K,
just have a
drink when you get home.
You should be all right, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, milk curdles in the heat, doesn't it? I would suggest that's not great for long distance running. I mean,
that's more good advice. Yeah, that's good stuff.
For the MDS, I was considering just a bucket and spade, just in the hope that at any point you are near water, you just got to dig for it.
I mean, your plans, your preparation for the MDS is second to none.
We're digging. What are you doing? He's digging.
My grind's broken. I'm covered in meat. I've got a bucket and spade.
Have you got any milk, mate? We're making a cup of tea.
I think you have to be careful if you get to the MDS to try and have all these sand jokes out of your system. Read the room. Now, I'm actually jumping ahead here because Pesto Decline asked which cocktail would provide the best kick for the last push on a half marathon.
Well, you know, again...
Well, the answer is no cocktail.
No, cocktails
don't drink booze.
No. Although I saw a great film at the weekend called Another Round.
Oh, you've seen it with Mads Mikkelsen.
Have you seen it?
No.
It's a fantastic movie.
Yeah.
It's about a bunch of disgruntled, fairly bored teachers who've read some research by a scientist who says that humans don't have enough alcohol in their bloodstream.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to perform more efficiently...
That's always been our experience.
Yeah, be more in tune. They have to start drinking. Basically they come up with a sort of like an experiment, I use that term loosely, where they drink at work during the day, constantly topping up the alcohol levels. And the film explores that premise. Are we not drunk enough? And it's hilarious. It's a really, really good film and really moving as well. But I've never drank, I've never mixed drink and work ever. I've never drank at gigs. Obviously, I've never drank booze whilst
running. It's funny because we both obviously...
I've been hungover.
It's been long discussed that we like a drink, but you don't really drink in pubs, let alone...
No, absolutely not.
Let alone during marathons.
But
it's crazy. There's been a lot of talk of this recently, and that we were flirting with the marathon du Médoc a couple of years ago. But I'm experienced enough now to just think... It wouldn't be any fun. It would be a little bit extreme. It's like bungee jumping or something. Yeah. You could do it.
It would be.
You know, it's like when I was little. I've never watched horror films for the thrill of being scared. I've never enjoyed the idea of getting a roller coaster. I don't like to embrace a negative experience.
Yeah. I mean, I like horror films. The idea of it's fun, but the reality is feeling sick whilst running. Like Marathon du Médoc, it's like it's wine, it's meats, it's cheeses. I'd just be sick.
Yeah.
I mean, having
easily the most appropriate things to ingest during a marathon can make you feel really sick.
Yeah, especially manufactured gels and stuff.
In feeling sick. Yeah. But I think that it does bring up a corollary. I was thinking about this in the pouring rain on the Saturday running around Victoria Park because I recorded a cider advert in there.
Right.
And it's funny because I did one of my earliest training runs and went through there around 14 miles on my way to 17 or something.
Yeah.
And I just think because of recording that advert, I got this kind of slightly hallucinatory idea of drinking a pint of cider and it being the most refreshing thing. And the other voice in my head was, you'd just puke it straight back out.
Yeah.
And so the idea of sort of cider and lager being something that I'm desperate for 20 miles into a marathon has been at play in my head.
I'm
definitely wrong about that.
Yeah. I mean, I've read some ultra runners who have a beer every now and again. I mean, when they're doing really long, obviously long races, and they've seemed to feel comfortable with that, but each to his own, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't drink beer anyway, so...
As we've been saying, we barely drink water when we're doing...
Yeah. No, but I think you're right. I think people get a bit paranoid about, am I thirsty or not? You know when you're thirsty, don't you? Really?
Yeah,
tend to be, you know. Marathon a little bit often, but no.
It's normally they're on Saturdays or Sundays.
Yeah.
Have I misunderstood?
Yeah. Ne se pas drink dans le marathon.
So I hope, Chris, that's answered your question. And yours, Pesto. Here you go. You've got the next one.
Okay. John May. When you're greeted by St. Peter at the Pearly Gates, which lifetime statistic would you like to know?
No, this is that's your answer. I'm asking Adam's question.
Okay. If you tailor a triathlon to best suit you, which three Olympics events are in? That's a nice one, isn't it?
Yeah, good question.
Triathlon to best suit, which three Olympic events are in? Probably all the running ones. The most boring.
Oh, God, do you know what, though? But I'm so Olympic illiterate because I literally thought one of my three events would be running.
Yeah.
I didn't even think of it.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
It's really tedious, but mine would be the marathon, the 10K and the 5K. That would be a fairly boring... But what did you see any of the triathlon in the Olympics?
No.
It's an incredible event. We won the team triathlon. It was fantastic.
Brilliant.
It's sort of mixed team triathlon. It was absolutely fantastic.
I love the way you use the word we there. That's it. I suppose we did. I mean, we won it.
GB, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where we are. But it was... I don't know, because I've considered training for a triathlon before, and I've gone so far as to buy a bike, which I used, a really nice Bianchi training bike, and I was so weak on the swimming, but at some stage I'd like to do one.
That was the moment, wasn't it? We were chatting with Martin Yelling about that, and I just suddenly realised, only while I was talking to him, saying, triathletes must... I've never met a triathlete who likes all three things equally.
Yes. Yeah.
I bet there are some. I bet the best ones do. They probably have a really good relationship with the one that they don't love.
Yes.
Like they've really learned to find their way with it. I'd have running.
Yeah.
And if I've got to commit to a distance, then okay, marathon.
Yeah.
Frisbee. I'm bloody great at that.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
And mountain hiking.
That'd be a good one, yeah.
They're my three top Olympics.
I might have two running events and then the shooting at the end so I could shoot all the people who are beating me.
What about a bit of skiing? We love skiing. You could do a biathlon.
Should we go
to the Winter Olympics?
It would be the changing kits that would really do my head in the triathlon. But if you're just doing a series of running events, that'd be fine, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You'd save a lot of time on that.
That's the most important thing in this hypothetical question.
Yeah. Come on, John, do that one.
Then. Oh yeah. So you all wandered into this one, which is quite exciting. You trailed this with when you're greeted by St. Peter at the pearly gates.
Yes.
Adam says.
Nice biblical name for the question.
Yes, Adam says when you're greeted by St. Peter at the pearly gates, which belief systems-wise, we're entirely outside my comfort zone. But let's just roll with it. When you're greeted by St. Peter at the pearly gates, which lifetime statistic would you like to know? How many hot dinners, total miles run ever, how many hours spent impersonating a police officer over, any stat you like? So basically, what's the one defining stat from our lives we'd like to see, you know, Strava'd up?
That's a really nice question. Is it? It's quite so.
Yeah, it's again
profound questions.
Two comedians, one Christian, one atheist.
Seemingly light-hearted Q&A coming from left field there with a bit of a
theological
existential question.
Perhaps unnecessarily existential.
Theological context.
You know the joke about the comedians at the pearly gates.
Go on then, what is that joke?
The comedians are on the way to a gig and they're in a car crash and they all die.
Yeah.
And they get to the gates of heaven and there's a massive queue of all the souls from around the world who died that day.
Yeah.
And they just walk up past the queue to the gate and say, yeah, we're the comedians.
Yeah. That's great. That's a very interesting one. I would say the weight of the tears of laughter that I've created on stage.
One of the running commentary presenters has created discomfort in the other.
Weigh those tears.
Great.
And distill them into pure joy. This is what I gave the world.
Well, if you get those tears in 200-300 mil packs, strap them under your armpits.
Imagine the nectar. Imagine how sweet they'd propel you right forward.
I think they'd be
down the MDS. That'd be fantastic.
Probably
that. Yes.
It's interesting that you say it's interesting, but I think that it's funny how we are defined by being comedians. Because my first thought was, how many gigs did I do?
I was
daydreaming the other day. Someone was saying you should have a map. I've always wanted a map of the world and of Britain with pins in it for all the gigs I've ever done and all the gigs I've done more than once.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd have a secondary map now with runs on it.
Yes,
but I'd say how many gigs did I do?
How many gigs? How many people have made smile on the street whilst walking
past? Yeah, you've made me not want my answer. Ian Denslow
asks. Great question,
asks,
Adam. Thanks for that.
Yeah, nice one.
Really nice one.
When will the Robin Paul co-authored book be out? Asks Ian Denslow.
It's only a matter of time, isn't it? All we need is we're limping towards a concept. Well, I'm limping.
You're limping. Well, that's it. We need three things. I mean, we need the idea that someone wants to commission.
Yes.
We've had some ideas. This becomes a sort of a planning meeting, but we've not just got to have it. We've got to sell it.
Yes.
But the short answer is we're both keen.
Yes.
And we both need another project. So
I think that
in real terms, we should go into the future where there's three books: your next book, my next book, and our book.
Yes.
And
they're three
different things.
And it would be the tale of one bloke who's running all the time, or one bloke constantly injured.
Yeah, the limpy guy. the limpy guy with the bag of tears.
The limpy groin guy smothered in tears.
And the book could be called Stop Saying Groin.
Yeah. Where's Paul? Where's Tonks?
Where Tonk? That was actually one of the questions. Picture. Where Tonks? It's going to be a couple of years, so bear with us, but it's on the way.
Yeah.
Here you go. Mark in Worthing, you know, the ordinary run who does Worthing Park Run, asks,
apparently most of us run our slow runs too fast and our fast runs too slow. So how slow is slow or vice versa?
That's clear. Read that again.
Apparently, most of us run our slow runs too fast and our fast runs too slow. So how slow is slow or vice versa?
Yeah.
Relatively speaking, of course.
Good question. Yeah,
good
but
question.
I think he's teasing us a little bit, isn't he? I mean, I think that, when it comes down to it, it can be... You can think too much about your run. You know what I mean? It's really good to work on this stuff, and I've really enjoyed learning to have different speeds.
Yeah.
But you have to ultimately, like we were talking about drinking to thirst, you've ultimately got to run to how fast your body wants to run.
Yeah.
You know?
It's kind of, I think, there's been a bit of research. I know what he means, because a lot of people, especially inexperienced runners...
Are you saying I go off too fast in events?
No. This is about races. This is about training. They tend to run at a similar pace, which is sort of moderately quite hard, sort of. They tend to do that, when in fact most of the training effect, it's that 80-20 thing, isn't it? If you just did 20% of your runs at pace and 80 really slow, you get a lot, an awful lot of effect out of that.
Yeah, it feels counterintuitive to do those kind of junk miles and stuff.
Yes, yeah, totally. I mean, for me, slow running is like anything between 9 and 10 minute miles. I mean, everyone's got a different.
When we're both running and chatting and we're fit, we run at about 10 and a half, don't we?
Right,
and that's slow for us.
Yeah, that's slow, but feels quite nice.
But I think that's the key thing is that we didn't decide on that. That comes from talking and taking it easy.
Yeah, but when you go for a run with Vassos, he runs.
Yeah, or even Neil Russell, who's running
eight and a half minute miles.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Chatting away. Like Pavies as well, just over.
But this, the key thing I think is the chat. You know what I mean? Is if you can chat and genuinely chat at this pace, it's all to do. You're finding a natural way to discover how much it's making you breathe.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think that's a really good point. That's a really good test. If you can chat comfortably while running, that's about the right
thing. And also, another one is breaking a sweat. If you can go for a run, not in boiling weather, and run without breaking a sweat, that's how slow a slow run should be.
Yeah.
A fast run, I think the key thing with that is, I'm reminded of listener Anne-Marie Cox, who was getting a great time the other day, and sort of saying, it's a shame I can't go faster. It's like, this is sort of to do with something you know more about than me, but sort of threshold versus maximum pace.
Yeah.
You've got to, if you're making really good pace, let yourself off. You don't necessarily need to get into that red. It's nice to get a PB, but it's not logical to try and always be hitting one.
It's sort of about perceived effort, isn't it? If you're training and doing a lot of miles and your fast run might not be as fast as normal, your fast run would normally be... Like if you want to do a marathon at 7 minute mile pace, your fast run if you're doing like a 6 mile run would be about 6:40 mile pace. Mm. That's really hard unless you're in company as well. It's much better to do it if you can in a big group. But it is about effort. It's about the effort that you put in.
And again, so if you feel okay with it, you've got to try and be cool about the kind of how you feel kind of at rest, almost psychologically at rest. So like this thing of having a conversation is really good for your slow runs. Fast runs, I did my 10K the other day.
Yeah.
And I came out of it feeling pretty relaxed. And it can be very easy afterwards to think, I must have not given it enough.
I
didn't beat myself up enough on it. But I don't know if that's true. I think that's misleading. If the time was good and you felt good.
Of course. Of course. But I think it's a nice question because it's so easy. It depends whether you want to compete or not, doesn't it? And if you want to get a bit faster. But if you do want to get a bit faster, it's nice to differentiate between your normal sort of junky slow miles. When you say junk, it's not derogatory. All miles are great miles.
No, we need another word for that, really.
It's just
other miles.
Yeah, other miles, rest miles, chatty miles with you. And the bigger differentiation you can make between those two, the better, I would say. Do you know what I mean? And really.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing. It's basically for the slow runs, you almost can't run too slow. For the fast runs, run as fast as you can. But recognize running as fast as you can takes many forms.
Yeah, and don't think I've got to get a PB every time I go out. I mean, I'd even go so far as to just run off watch when I do my slow runs. I mean, I often don't even take a watch with me. It's just running purely to feel. And those are the days where you can add the miles a little bit. You can run, 10 slow
miles
and
I
feel
never,
quite comfy at the end.
I never know what my mile splits are until I finish running.
Right.
And for me, training is all about my running journey now is to try and identify all those different paces.
That
when I'm running as fast as I can, when I'm running at a good pace that I can sustain for multiple miles, or when I'm running... chatting and planning on literally doing as many miles as I can over a week.
Yes.
I can feel all those different paces.
And I'm
getting better at doing them deliberately, but still keeping it very natural and doing it sort of from feel and body rather than numbers.
So, in terms of, you said relatively speaking, we've kind of come down to slow runs at anything, 2-3 minutes slower than race pace, and fast runs, 20 seconds slower than... 20, it depends on distances, but sort of perceived effort and just getting that differential, just really, really squeezing it. It's a good question, though.
There you go. Thanks, Mark. And watch out for that beach.
There's no such thing as an ordinary runner.
No. You're worth it.
Yeah.
You're in worthing.
Yeah.
This is a good question.
Go on, then.
But it's a good question, but really, I think Lee quite reasonably wanted to tell us a story, and I don't know if we can match the story. Because the question is, this is Lee Thomas, what's the best a food has tasted post-run?
Right.
And while you're thinking about it, I want to tell you that Lee says, and I quote, I had a wagon wheel after I suffered through a half marathon that tasted like manna from heaven.
Nice.
I can
nice.
Really imagine that. Yeah. It's like my imaginary pint of cider.
Yeah. Nice one. Nice. The post-race wagon wheel.
So it's almost, like I say, it doesn't matter if it's the right thing, because we all know wagon wheels are basically second rate.
Yeah. It's it's interesting. Like, you're almost tempted to say anything would taste great. I mean, it's because you're in the post-race zone where life is different. You've broken through the barrier between self and other. You're one. You're omniscient. You've joined. You're connected.
Yes.
So it's just, I mean, like, you know, post-race spag bowls have been absolutely fantastic.
Oh, we get pasta, you know, the pasta nice thing can be wonderful. Because the great thing about a nice pasta meal, I was thinking lasagna, because, you know, I made myself that lasagna for the Virtual London.
Yeah.
And, you know, because you were there, you just wouldn't go away, you were around the house. And
I tried to finish it off before I got back. Rob wouldn't mind if I have a bit. Can you imagine?
And I cooked it up afterwards and it was pretty special, but I wasn't ready. I nearly collapsed into it. But the next day, oh my God, when I finished it off.
Pasta the next day is always better.
God, it was like, imagine picking up a dictionary made of lasagna and just eating it. That was
nice.
Oh,
nice.
But it's that combination, isn't it? Because that's the right stuff. It's a good meal. It's your carb loading.
Yeah.
It's flavoursome and it's a treat, but also
comfort.
It's pure comfort. It's just home. It's like wrapping yourself in a blanket.
I'd imagine a wagon wheel might feel a bit too sort of mucusy for me, a bit too kind of glupulous. Do you know what I mean? Like sticky.
Yeah, a bit cloying.
Yeah, a bit kind of clingy to the tooth.
But I'm trying to remember one that, because the lasagna wasn't quite there. I'm trying to remember an experience like these.
I mean,
where I've had something and gone.
When we did the marathons, we come down with the Parkinson's. What did we used to eat then?
They'd have a good pasta meal there.
Yes, they would actually. Yeah,
and they also laid in Erdinger alcohol free, which is a really good thing to have post.
Nice, yeah.
But also the thing, trying to remember a moment like that, I actually during a long training run. Well, a long way in, I had a starburst.
Nice.
That was like, it was like a religious experience.
Nice.
It was either lime or blackcurrant.
Nice.
And the flavour burst in my mouth. I was just like, I can't believe this is real. I was like, I'd seen the curvature of the earth.
Would that be the stats that at the pearly gates, how many starbursts you've had? There's often, just to finally finish that point, there's often kept me through the last couple of miles of a long run has been the idea of just in the bath with a massive cup of tea and some fruitcake or something. That's quite nice.
Yeah,
that's that's a moment.
Negative moment was that when you were in the bath, you were going to go in the bath with a cup of tea, and this might have been after your sub three, and there wasn't any milk.
Still talk about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I shouldn't have mentioned
still
it.
Still talking.
He's grimacing.
There's no milk in.
He started pulling bits of furniture apart.
2:59:21 and there's no milk.
Next question.
When are Stevie and Paula making their next appearance?
Who's that? Who asked that?
Johnny Sharp.
Johnny, good question.
I'm aware that they haven't. Shall I go and get them out? Oh, we answer this question. They're up there on the shelf.
We'll get a picture.
Maybe take a photo.
Isn't it? You don't need to do it now. Do it afterwards.
Well, no, they're only up there. I'll be back in one second. Let me just get them here. Here we go. They're up top there. I've been thinking about them, actually. Here we go.
You see, this was all you.
Here we go.
You went and got these done.
I know, it's amazing, So, Paula, shut up! Here we have Stevie and Paula! Stevie, nice, gentle Stevie, just got back from Tokyo. He had a great time doing a bit of commentating. And that Paula, you did some commentating as well. What did you think of the marathon?
Did you see that bloke?
You've lost your Paula.
She's gone really bad.
Bernard Manning, what happened
did you
there?
See that bloke who at the water station?
Tell me faster.
Did you see that guy from France? Did you see him?
Right. Battered off all the bottles.
Battered off all the bottles and then took last one. What's that about?
Oh, no, I think he was just tired at that moment. There's nothing wrong about
it. Are you joking? You bloody joking. Did it deliberately. We've all done it.
Have you done that?
I never did that.
I noticed that, one of the reasons Stevie and Paula can't come back is because Paula's voice has changed completely.
What was Paula's voice originally?
I'm not telling you. If you can't remember.
It definitely wasn't that.
No, it's more military.
More military.
Always counting.
Yes, counting steps.
This is the thing. I always feel that I hope that, I don't know if Paul or Steve know about this, and I hope that they would enjoy it if we did do it. It always feels like light bullying. I mean, they'll definitely be back. That's the trouble with Stevie and Paula.
They'll definitely be back. But no, you're right. They should have come back during the Olympics, actually.
Yeah, they
should. Because Stevie and Paula were so prominent.
Well, nice that they were really there. I'm used to them. This, it all came about, you know, it was all... It's so, it feels very 2020 to me because they're in apps. It all just seems like a crazy dream now.
Yeah.
Because they were in my ears.
Of course, during the old the virtual runs.
And then we did that the pantomime. The whole thing seems like a cheese dream now. Yeah. Look at them. They're so lovely. Who made these for
side,
you?
Side by side. Is it 40 runners? Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Bless them.
They will return.
That's right.
Paula and Stevie together forever.
But what did you really think about the bottles off the table?
It was an interesting one, that one. I've presumably people have seen it. It was sort of all over social media. Olympic marathon. I think it was a 30-kilometer point. I've never seen anything like it. I must say, to me, it looked like a moment of gamesmanship to throw other runners off their rhythm just for a moment. You never know what's happening when everyone's running that close and little rivalries happening.
Yeah.
All I can say is it looked deliberate to me.
It looked deeply mean-spirited.
Yeah, it looked like he ran his hand over through one line of bottles and then changed his handshake to pick up the last.
Yeah.
It didn't look like the act of a very tired guy who's just floundering for water.
No, maybe it was supposed to, but it didn't.
Yeah, and people were saying, yeah, but there's water down the... It was one of those things where everyone just projected all over it, didn't it? So you had people saying, there's no way, this is just tired, whatever. But most of the runners I know just called it immediately and just said,
if it was just to do with being tired, then anyone ever before would have done it. I mean, it was a really surreal and very neat pattern of behaviour, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was. Yeah. And people saying, why would he do it? Just to throw people off rhythm a little bit, just to mess with people's minds a little bit. You know, it's just, I think we underestimate how incredibly competitive elite sport is.
Yeah, it's like a footballer doing a foul.
Yeah, people just want to hurt each other a bit at that moment. The problem was people like Piers Morgan, who had an awful Olympics with a series of appallingly bad takes. He leapt in on it as well and
Piers
started
Morgan,
slagging this
bad take. Out of nowhere.
He started having a go at this guy, and do you know what I mean? It became
end up being on the wrong side.
I've got no desire to vilify or victimise this guy. He's fine. I totally get it. It wasn't ultimately that important, but it did look deliberate to me, I must say.
This next question is another has another story attached.
Go
to
on
it.
Then.
Andrew Dunning says, and this is an interesting question.
Yeah.
Although it would be nice to talk to Vassos about this, the aforementioned Vassos. Have you ever used malt loaf for a purpose other than nutrition?
What would you possibly use it?
Well, that's what worried me. When he asked, I thought, oh my goodness, is this? This sounded like more your department, but it's too heavy to work like a yellow sponge.
Yeah.
And this would be a relief to you,
yeah.
And not in that way. Once used it in the absence of an airbed plug, and it worked an absolute treat.
No, you're right. It's very malleable, isn't it? It's like the Play-Doh of foods, isn't it? Malt loaf. It's perfectly.
Is it, or is this the only other time it's been used? I think that basically it's 99.999% used for eating.
Yeah.
And then there's that time when Andrew Dunning stuck it in a lilo.
I'd say you'd predominantly use it for eating. Yeah. Used in some kind of clubs in town after hours.
Is there vegan malt loaf? How? Why wouldn't there be? I'm trying to think.
Sure there probably would.
I think there's eggs involved.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, I really, like, you know, Vassos turned me onto it as a kind of pre-marathon. A dish of choice.
I can imagine in an ultra running scenario that a good malt loaf slathered with a bit of spread could genuinely
really
be a religious
nice.
Experience.
Give you a bit of a boost, certainly. Yeah.
I've always been soaring crazy.
Yeah. They might heat up a bit.
I am so hungry. Okay, here we go. Here's the next one.
Okay. How do you motivate? This is a question from Tegan McKernan. How do you motivate each other on days when one or other of you really doesn't want to run?
I think there's two problems with this, because on one hand, it's ironic because we're not running. But that's different. That's injury.
Yeah, we're not running now.
We don't really get that.
Because we meet, let's face it, we meet once a week.
Yeah.
And we have done 4 years. It's something I really look forward to, really.
Yeah,
to,
and it's different. Prepare. You've got to think, if listeners are thinking of us like a long-term married couple, it's a different kind of deal. You know, we meet to run. We want to run.
Yes.
We don't see each other otherwise.
So I suppose the question is, how do we motivate each other when we're not together if we don't want to run?
But even on your own, when do you not want to run? When I don't want to run, I don't run.
Yeah, that's the thing.
But it doesn't often happen.
That's the simplicity of it.
And generally, if I don't run, I run later.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I run
yeah.
later that day or a push the next day.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
I'm sorry if it's unhelpful. I'm not trying to sound sort of all clever. I just I don't really.
It's very rare that I don't
really know the feeling.
It's very rare that I don't want to run. But it's sort of. But sometimes you think you feel obliged to run, don't you? Sometimes there's a sense of obligation around it, but I sort of.
It can wear a bit thin, but I generally find that during a run. I think that the we're obviously. You know, maybe not useful to some listeners, but I would say listeners recognize that we have a very nice lifestyle in terms of freelancery.
Yeah,
on the one hand, we totally manage our own time. And on the other hand, when we're working, we can do significant work that's worth doing that doesn't take all day.
Yeah,
it just means that we can really pick and choose. Look at me on Saturday. Didn't want to go to parkrun, but I went and did a run later. I think people who've got day jobs. Obviously, you can't do that, but also I think you need to remember that that puts a framework on your running that makes it a little bit more competitive.
Yeah,
like, for example, it sounds like, oh, he always wants to run. But the number of times I've wanted to run at like 8 in the morning and not got out until 10:30 or 11 o'clock is, I mean, it's happened hundreds of times.
Yes, yeah, yeah. We're just jammy in that respect, aren't
we? We're jammy.
We don't get the structure that other people get, which sometimes I really envy, I have to say, and particularly during lockdown. It's just, you know, it really... You know, people working from home, etc. We just lost everything, didn't we? I mean, it all went. And there's times when I really struggle with that. And, of course, I needed my running more. Going for a run was my only structure. It was my only thing to do that day, apart from survive, was go for a run. So, yeah, well, you know, and also part of it is we don't tend to run 7 days a week either, do we? We run sort of 4 or 5 times a week.
So yeah, I mean, I used to. I've come up from 3 times a week to sort of very gradually moving towards running most days.
Yes.
And it's still not running every day.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be. You know, I think that I've got rest days written into my hard drive. And there's this sense of, I just think we've got a distance from it. You know, it's like, well, we're going to be running. And then sometimes you have one, you think, oh, I didn't enjoy that. I didn't want to go. But it's not like... It's not a constant negotiation in life whether you want to run or not. It's like in the long game.
Yeah,
of course we're running.
It's taken as given. I don't have to give myself a pep talk to go for a run. It's just part of the fabric of days and weeks.
It goes back to that conversation I was saying the other week about elasticity. I think that it actually is to do with the relationship to schedule.
Yeah, yeah.
And you just got to be careful it doesn't get too rigid. And in terms of motivating someone else, that's difficult because you've got to listen to them. I have this, you know, me and my wife have this. And again, we'll both have it because it's harder for us to both go out together because there's always something that needs to be done.
Mm.
But generally, one or other will say to the other one, you want to, you'll be glad you did.
Yeah, of course, of course. I mean, it is
And that's always true, isn't it?
It is that cliche of you never feel... worse after running, but it's sort of, it's true, you never feel worse after a run.
No, you're just 100, you're 1,000 times more likely to think I don't want to do this run than you are to think I wish I hadn't done that.
Totally.
All right, let's go on. Any chance of some running commentary merchandise or running gear from Neil Marsh? Neil, we all had our fingers burned with the lovely running commentary tops.
Yeah, we had it. We semi-bankrupted.
Yeah, they cost you. They're beautiful. We love
them.
But they were basically they cost you money and they cost us money. And that's not a great business model.
Yeah, no. So, but that's not to say there might be some sort of something else down the line. But,
I think ultimately it would be to do with working with someone because we were trying to get, you know, we were trying to work with that company and they didn't care who we were. And we'd probably need either...
We can't say who the company is. It's just a relationship that was out of balance. Wasn't
yeah, so we might need a new company to work with.
A new sense of balance.
We'd still, but in all seriousness, we love those tops.
So if someone, thousands of pounds.
if someone at the top of that company could get us past the kind of the trick financial deal we have with them, we'd love to deal that. And we might do it with some other stuff. It's like a comedy venue. If you haven't got a friendly host, you can't make these things happen.
Possibly next year, running commentary calendars, just putting it out there.
Is there nudity involved?
No. Jesus. But I don't know, just why not?
It's a great idea, particularly with scheduling. We could also put wisdom on them. With a picture of you standing naked in the ocean saying something like...
Yeah, it's best. If you don't like the wet, get out of the sea.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I think that was going to be sea-related.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby.
It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Here's a question from a... Oh, sorry, it's your turn, but I'll deal with this one. This one's from a guy called Martin Hutchinson. Have we come across Martin before?
Seems...
I think he's been for a run every now and again.
Vaguely familiar.
I think he's from Lancashire. Sorry, Martin, that was too far. He says...
Hello, Martin. Friend of the show.
And he's, I haven't got the emoji here, but it was a kind of shrugging hands emoji like this.
Right, that's it.
Wait a minute. Yeah. I'll get a picture of you doing it, doing the emoji. This is Paul doing it. And make the noise as well for the soundtrack. The noise was perfect. Will you really run an ultra?
I think we will. Well, I think I definitely will. Yeah, I'm really. It just feels like the next natural. Progression thing to do. It ties in with the idea for the second book as well, but it's just sort of you try and resist these formulas in life a little bit, that you're going to do a marathon and then the next thing you do is an ultra. But I feel it's something I feel curious about and inspired by, and I think I definitely will. There's obviously a sort of debate around my physical ability to do this.
Yeah, I think the timing is interesting, you know, because you've got to sort out your, you've got to get better, you've got to sort out your injuries, and from here, that becomes, that's on the yellow alert, not red alert, yellow alert.
Yeah, yeah, it needs. I need to sort of, look back on the last sort of couple of years. The calf was a malingering injury, but getting better. Even the root canal stuff really took it out of me for three weeks.
Tough.
It really took it out of me. And then this groin thing, but I don't think this groin thing has happened because of a sort of structural imbalance. I think it was just my stupidity with the football. I don't think it was like the groin reacting to the calf and all that. I think my sort of skeletal body running is fine. I think I was just asking too much of it.
Yeah.
In terms of twisty, turny move, and when I play football, I really go for it, and it's just can't do it.
I think that the basic thing is that we know we've been flirting with the idea of an ultra for a while now. That's what you're alluding to,
yes.
Martin. So someone's been listening carefully to us, kind of almost trying to trick ourselves into this, and the time has come. We need to commit or abandon it, and we're both of a mind to commit.
Yeah.
I've registered my interest in the Race to the Stones. I also have an emotional relationship with it. It's kind of hard to pin down.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm going to do it. It's part of for me. It's a reframing of things you do before. You know, it's a midlife thing.
It's a bucket list thing.
Yeah. So definitely, injury notwithstanding. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not planning to do the marathon de Sable though.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to more sand comedy.
Yes. Bucket related comedy. Bucket list with a bucket.
All right, you take the next one.
All right, Nick. If you could design a race in the UK, where would it go and how long would it be? Jenny Sawford. Interesting. If you could design a race in the UK. I'm really bad at questions like this because I'm so appreciative of the races that people put on that I can't sort of think. I can't really think beyond them. Let me have a think. It just makes that question just makes me think of races
That you like?
That I really like.
Yeah, makes
me think of the Scarborough 10K.
Well, I tell you what, I'm thinking about it now, thinking about it freshly, just from you saying it. Mm. I think that, first of all, I had an idea just then, just as you said it. It'd be nice to do... I like the distances that you don't get to do very often that fit in our wheelhouse.
Yeah.
So either 10 or 20 miles.
Yes.
They're quite interesting.
Yeah.
And I really like a race that has kind of like almost a children's storybook interest.
Right.
But I don't need it to be a really challenging ultra.
Okay.
Like, I really enjoyed those laps on the Olympic Park 10K.
Yeah.
Just because it went over a bridge and then under a bridge. And
yes.
Then, you know what I mean? So it wasn't. And another race like that, which was more traily, was the Cannock Chase 10K.
Yes.
Which was a bit more kind of up and downhill, but it wasn't like a tough mudder.
Yes.
You know?
Maybe it
would be in different weather.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking what you want is the running commentary 10-miler, which goes to all the places that we always go to that we take for granted that other people wouldn't know.
So it would have
the Parkland, both bits of the Parkland Walk
and
Queenswood and Finsbury Park and Clissold Park.
And tie
together the green spaces, you know, avoid
really
the...
Nice.
We get permission to run around Woodbury Down.
That would be amazing.
And while we were there, we could go slow and try and catch and kill some of the birds.
Take the parkie hostage.
As you go around Woodbury Down, you could bat every bird.
Bat
them all and then catch the last one by the throat.
The last one, completely unintentionally. I'd probably end up thinking about it, probably do a sort of 10-mile sort of cross-country race round Osmotherley. I've got this sort of loop that I do round Osmotherley. Really hilly, quite barren initially, and then really lush. It's slightly complicated by the fact that when I do it, I always get lost.
Yeah, we did it and got lost. That is the other thing, isn't it? And we went to do that trail series one in Dalby Forest. The long trail runs are exactly what we want, and us planning one would be absolutely disastrous. Follow us!
It would be the race directions would be like, you go up to the top and run across, and then I don't really know what happens. This is where it ends. Good luck with it.
I absolutely love, as well, towpaths and disused railways.
Yeah, I like it. Absolutely
fantastic. Yeah. I was remembering the Bakewell Park run that we did with the on the run camp.
Yes.
What a park run, which is a lot like the Parkland Walk. And, of course, the Canal Canter was amazing, and the 20-mile training run was even better because it was only 20 miles and I didn't get Lyme disease.
Yeah, of course, it always helps manage to avoid disease. This is from Phil Cairns. Who would be your ideal podcast guests? Both of you, two answers allowed.
When he says two answers around, does that mean one each or two each?
I don't know.
Phil, let us know. This is important stuff.
An addendum to the addendum. I would say...
Have as many answers as you like. Just two. Two between you. One each. Or less.
Thank you, Steve. I would say... I'd like to get... I think we talked about this before. I'd like to get Camille Heron in. Who we met at the National Running Awards. She's fantastic. She's just an incredible person, really relaxed. Obviously an incredible runner, just really gentle and fun. But I think that's exactly right.
I think to make it clear for the audience, obviously, like on paper, there's lots of people like Camille, it would be absolutely great. But when we met her, she just had that kind of, there's a kind of glow offer that you're like, oh yeah, this would be great. She's just so cool, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was great. And also I'd like to chat to Malcolm Gladwell.
So you're having two.
I'm going to have both.
So I can't have one.
I'm going to take two straight off the bat. Because Gladwell, I really like his writing, but I've also heard and read that he's quite a serious athlete.
He's a fascinating guy. He's a really good call.
A really fascinating character. But he ran at a high level on the track as a kid and returned to it as an adult over 5K. And I quite like the idea of chatting to someone at different ends of the endurance spectrum. The Camille Heron on the 100-mile runs, the Gladwell on the 5K and the track as an older athlete. And I'm just interested to see what he's doing there and why he does it, because I know he'll be fascinating about it, as he is about everything.
Oh, yeah. That's the other thing, is that he's just an interesting man. And the other thing, it's nice when we always want to do our interviews. You want to go out for a run, you want to chat and really get to, like your great interview with Joe, you know what I mean? There's so much in it, and it feels like at the beginning of a conversation that could really go. All right, then. Well, we're going to have three answers, because I'm going to have one now. You just have to chew on it, Phil.
Go on, then.
It's either one too many or one too few.
Yeah.
You know who we should have? And I know some people really don't like him, and I'd really want it to be a kind of... This is a good dream one, because it will never happen, particularly in a kind of like loose three quarters an hour, see where the conversation goes way.
Go on then.
Tom Cruise.
Cruise would do it.
Wouldn't that be
Cruise,
great?
Cruise would be bang up for it.
I know.
Cruise, I know. Why didn't you say so before? I know Cruise. Because McIntyre knows Cruise. McIntyre's always going for drinks with Cruise.
Yeah, get Cruise. Yeah, get Cruise.
Yeah. LTC. Sure? LTC.
Because I'm confident.
Topcat. Matt calls him Topcat. Topcat.
When he calls him Topcat, do the words boss cat appear on screen?
Please don't do that, Michael. Topcat. No, we'll get Cruise in.
Yeah. Okay, so that's set.
Does he run, Tom? Is he a runner or?
Have a look. Have a look at a couple of his films and see if you ever see him run.
No, you're right. go on then. Do you want to do these?
All right. Okay.
Are we?
Martin Adams asks, what run or race would you both like to do again, but have that first time feeling? That's a good question.
Yeah.
So it's almost like want to experience again rather than actually do again.
For me, it sounds really dull, and for some people, really London-centric. But my heart always returns to the London Marathon. the first time I did it was amazing, amazingly slow and difficult and torturous, but really, it felt life-changing. I'm sure it would have been any marathon I'd done, but the first one that I did was London. And I haven't done any of the really big city marathons. I've got nothing to compare it to. It just feels a magic to it, to the finish, to coming down the embankment, the mall, the crowd support. I don't know, there's something about it that I found so sort of moving and transformational. And yeah, it's just, I'd love to. I always envy people doing first marathons again. And when they say London, it's obviously because I've done
London, and also
coming through Blackfriars Bridge and the sound systems.
And I think there's a sense also with the sort of nature of the London Marathon in particular, is that one might envy people doing the first marathon, but one might also envy, and this is like goes right beyond possibly a lot of the community we're in and talking to, people doing their only marathon.
Yeah.
People who really don't run and they're just there that day. My friend Sarah, who said, oh, you're going to love it, it's going to be the best day of your life. And she doesn't run. I think, I don't know, she might run for recreationally sometimes, but she was that person. I'm going to do the marathon and that's that.
Yeah.
And it was just an incredible experience for her.
Yeah, well, when I ran my first marathon, I didn't realise I was going to do another seven. I was just running a marathon.
But no one told him when to stop.
Yeah, just kept sort of, it's that never again, but when can I sign, where can I sign up sort of feeling.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. See, a lot of mine, this is not the question, and so we'll dismiss it, but a lot of mine I want to do again because I was so grumpy the first time.
Yeah.
I didn't enjoy my first London Marathon. I didn't enjoy the Berlin Marathon. I kind of snatched victory from the jaws of defeat in New York.
Mm.
I had a lovely time the first time I did York.
Yeah, York's
great.
A great marathon.
And so that was great. So I don't, you know, I'm trying to think of something really magical that where I kind of caught that. And I think that it's some of my favourite parkrun tourism. Mm. I'd like to go back because you get that kind of it's slightly scary because you don't know where what you're doing.
Yes, yeah, that's
So I'll give you one example, but it's really just an example. As I remember when I did a gig in deepest Wales and I went and did the Tenby Park Run, which is in the gardens of the National Trust place.
Yeah.
And it was raining slightly, gradually realising where the start was and that there weren't that many people there.
Mm.
And then gradually realising on the run what the course was like, because it was this triple loop of the kind of a valley, but it was like an ornamental, a landscaped valley, not a valley.
Nice, yeah.
And, oh, God, it was great. And it had exactly what I was saying. It was like something out of a children's book, like something out of The Exploits of Moomin Papa.
Nice.
It kind of went through low woods, up a hill and down a hill, and then over a little wooden bridge. And then it went up and back at a cone, and there was just a really jolly bloke, real fantastic thank you marshal at the apex of the course. And it was one of the first times in the wider scheme of things that I'd keyed into how good a three-lap run, park run is. Mm. Because you were... In the first one, you're like, oh, so this is the lap. On the second one, you're like, this is the lap. And then the third one, you're like, this is the last lap.
Yes. Yeah.
And
You like courses with a bit of twisty, turny variety.
But I want the balance. I want variety and then to get the sense of it. You know, so I want the sense of the runner's sense of feet on the ground, number of kilometres, get to the end. But I want the dreamer's sense of, trees.
I'd quite happily have a point-to-point park run on fast and flat, straight ahead.
Hope Park.
I'd happily.
Well, you'd do it on the track, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I find the track absolutely terrifying. South Manchester Park Run is a dream because it's because you know, as someone who's like got quite a good internal map, I can do that course over and over again and go, huh? Oh, I see. And it changes slightly.
The only problem with that is people cut corners there. That's the only problem.
It's
with
just
that.
One guy, one time. Let it go. But yeah, so basically, whatever the next stroke, last park run that's in a beautiful place and has three laps. And Paul wants the London Marathon because, as we all know, it's the only real marathon. I'm joking! Pesto declines a cocktail question we addressed early on. I mean, if there was a real espresso martini with strong coffee.
Yeah, of course.
It's going to make you a bit giddy, but give you a bit of a blast.
Starburst.
It's very sweet. You probably just puke it straight back out, which is great. Phil Sweatman. Maybe it's Sweetman, but we like Sweatman because of the nominative determinism.
It's a very, very running name to have.
Phil is running the London Marathon in a tractor costume.
Phil Chaftnips.
No, I'd rather not. Oh, sorry, I thought you wanted me to fill your chaftnips. But Phil says, running London Marathon in a tractor costume, which is heavy and wobbly. I have to hold on to it, so can't swing arms.
Wow.
Any tips? Wow, that's
find
beyond.
A new costume?
Yeah, it sounds so tough, isn't it? I mean,
that's going to be really, really.
It's your journey, Phil. I don't know. You know
what is a costume? Does he say what the costume is?
It's a tractor.
It's a tractor.
Yeah, he attached a picture. It kind of hangs like a. He's looking out the big windows, and then it's around him at mid level.
Right.
I think it's.
So he's just going to run slow in the middle of the road and stop people passing. Is that his?
Well, he's going to. He's just going to plow right through. Or he might bail out.
But yes, I am.
We can't possibly help you because
that's
going to
be
a tricky
one. That's something I would never consciously undertake.
No, I will clip something to my pocket and go, oh, that's going to chafe.
Yeah,
right, it will chafe.
Yeah.
You know, anything that rubs against you every step for 26 miles.
That's the main thing there. Never mind our movements. You want to look for chafe points.
Yeah,
don't
you should be your first costume should be head to toe Vaseline.
Yes,
you should look like Morph. Yes. Before you even put the tractor
on. Yeah, because that could. But good luck, mate.
Yes. No, I mean,
that's
it's amazing.
All I can say.
We took us 3 months to ante up the confidence to go out in two bum bags, didn't it?
Yes.
And as comedians, well, maybe more me than Paul because people know you're a runner, but I've always been a bit of a silly. You know, anyway, people, particularly that first couple of times, they say, oh, you'll be doing it in fancy dress.
No.
So, no.
Good luck, though, mate.
Yeah, good luck.
We appreciate your adventure.
No, seriously. And we'll attach that picture so viewers can see. And Vaseline, watch those chafes.
Gareth Crook, what's the longest you've gone without running due to injury? I've been out 6 months, hoping to get back before the end of the year.
Oh, good luck with that, Gareth.
Yeah, good luck, Gareth. The longest I've been out is probably a couple of weeks recently.
Yeah, but, I would say with you, it's probably not quite long enough.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. Because of this. Yeah. Because 6 months, for me, about two, 3 weeks. This might be longer, I hope it isn't, but yeah, it's... I find it very difficult being injured.
Yeah,
it's very
tough.
Tricky. It's very hard not to rush back. And then a lot of people find this as well. When they do start running again and you're grateful to be running, you take it easy and then you get back. It's when you feel that you're back that the problems can start because you then think, I'm back, and then you start ramping it all up. But your body still hasn't quite recovered yet.
And also in a kind of good, bad way we all have to face is nothing ever really goes away.
Yeah,
everything leaves scar tissue.
Yes.
You can live with it, you can change it, you can become stronger.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You never go... back to being.
And you always think when you're injured that you're going to do loads of work on like upper body and bits and bobs, and I very rarely do that. I sort of, you know, to sort of get overall body strength or whatever. I'm pretty rubbish at all that stuff. It's just tough because the psychological thing that running gives you is so powerful and strong and semi-addictive and
it's scary, isn't it?
Peace,
I mean, I think you're absolutely right. This is one of those ones where our answers are very similar. That we've been really lucky, and two, we wouldn't handle it very well. I don't think either of us have done more than a month, and I've had two bone injuries since we've been running together. You've got to get it's hard to know. I'm so glad I had running in lockdown. It was everything. I'll look back years and years and now look at 2020 and think, well, what did they do in 2020?
And the
answer is I ran.
You're constantly sort of teased and tormented by the world which and everyone seems to be running. It's like you'd lost a sense of communality with all the runners.
Yeah, I can feel jealous of a runner who's running when I see someone running when I'm out running.
I mean, I feel jealous of runners when I'm fit enough to run. So it's, and you can go to events and help out at events, but I don't know if that just adds to the... general sense of we're not doing very well with this question.
No,
there's no positivity there.
Sure, you'll be back, Gareth. Yeah, we started with good luck, and then we took, but you've got to. That's why we like to run when we can. You've got to make hay while the sun shines.
Yeah.
Good luck, Gareth. And I think the other thing is we're all humans. We adapt. You know, if you're running all the time, it's hard to imagine not being able to run. But you will be okay. Of course, you've got to be okay.
Yes. Yeah.
We can't rely on anything. In the same way, like I say, it's an addiction. You know, we sort of think, oh, I can't do without a drink. But sometimes you do a lot without a drink.
And if he can swim, I do tend to try and swim a bit more.
That's made me think of something. Phil Nichol, who loves a run, fellow comedian who lives around here, I bumped into on the way here. And he said, I can't run, my knee's bad, but I've got into walking. Yeah. And he was loving his walking. He's really sort of shining. And, of course, we can't imagine that because we're not there. But if we were that,
of course,
on that course, we'd be him.
Yeah, you know. Alternative exercises.
Sophie Singfield.
Yeah.
Field.
Singfield.
What's your biggest regret so far? It's another quite negative one. What's your biggest regret so far in either in a race or just in the pure sense of running?
Let me have a think about that. My biggest regret.
Should we regret at all? I mean, we can dig one up, but
no regrets.
They don't work. No regrets. Don't be a berk. Oh, you had the words right.
the regrets. I sort of regret sort of not running for a few years, really, because it made me think about that when we talked about the first marathon. I ran my first marathon about 2003, and then I didn't really run properly for another 10 years after that. I ran my first marathon off just football training in like 3:30, and then didn't run for about another 10 years, really.
Yeah, and maybe you could have got some good runs in.
I could have beaten, you know, sub 3 then in the peak in my peak. So I lost my peak years as a runner.
Yeah, but look at this. You know, you see, that's the thing. It's like, how can you regret that? That's just as Steve Morrison. No, it wasn't Steve Morrison. It doesn't matter. Someone once said to me, it's just all part of the tapestry that makes up you. You did get yourself your marathon, and you wrote your book.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
And I wouldn't have done it.
I was thinking from my own story. You know, there was a lot of when I was at my fastest, probably ever.
Yeah.
I was very naive, doing it all kind of in offhand, sort of. Part accidental and certainly very untutored, unknowing way.
Yeah.
So it's easy to say, oh, I wish I'd known what I was doing. I couldn't have done this, could have done that. It's like, it was what it was.
Yeah. There is one regret I have, actually. It was during the... every year when I was at school, I used to win the school 1,500 metres. It wasn't a particularly great school for runners, but I was just into it, and I was the kid who won every year. And then my last year, I lost a kid called Jonathan Beadle. And he beat me in the 1500 metres, which was quite big news for me anyway. I remember him, and there was a girl who was like, she was a couple of years younger than me. It was like just a good mate. I don't know, I can't remember her first name now, but her second name was Rawnsley. And she was just really sweet and a really nice girl. And I was really...
Raunchy? Was her first name Raunchy?
No. There was nothing like that, actually. We were just mates.
You were just mates with Raunchy Rawnsley.
But really good. But just really good friends. And... And he sprinted away from me for the last 300 metres. I remember her, as I came around the last bend, she was like encouraging me to go faster. And I swore at her.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I could tell it really upset her. And it really upset me afterwards. I was just in such a bad mood. And I'd like to say sorry.
Did you say sorry to her?
I did say sorry to her. But it was never quite the same. Because I was so angry at myself. I was projecting and I was young. And I regret that.
What about that time you swore really loudly in front of the little kid after you dropped his jelly bean?
I regret that as well. Angry moments during running. It's so weird to get angry during running, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's so
but
weird.
It's,
I don't do that so much now.
It's physical, isn't it? You've got your testosterone's up, your blood sugar's down.
Yeah.
What can you do?
Your jobs are sweet. Yeah, your Jonathan Beadle's beating you. Yeah.
Yeah, someone said when we were doing Run Chat, someone said they got into it late in life and they regretted not starting earlier.
That's life, though. I totally get what you mean.
It's a different journey. I think I just park those. It's just somewhere in another universe that you is doing that. Good luck to them.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, I hope people are still enjoying this because I'm loving this.
Yeah,
I don't know how long this episode is, but let's do it.
It's nice, yeah, let's do it.
This question feeds into that. Scott Conroy asks.
Scott, good old Scotty.
What? And this is a question for you.
Good old Scott.
What's the optimal start time for a two-bottle sundae? There's a subsequent question.
Yeah,
what time do you generally get up on a Monday after a two-bottle Sunday?
Yeah, I would say that is a good question. I think the optimal start time is probably over lunch, actually. A late lunch, a late sort of 3 p.m.
Oh, wait. You said lunch. Damn it. I started drinking too early in my head then.
No, sort of. Well, I mean, breakfast, dinner, tea, lunch, Sunday. I call it Sunday lunch. Sunday's the only day I have lunch. But Sunday lunch for me is about 2:30.
Mm.
Start drinking then, a nice roast, and then just continue into the evening. So it can take you. So the first bottle, you don't really feel that much because you're eating and chatting to mates, and then they leave, and then you start drinking.
It's like.
And then the second one opens about 8.
It's a lot like being at a wedding, isn't it? You're going slow and you don't notice it.
Yeah, they're the good ones. But I mean,
it's the drinking equivalent of ultra running.
Yeah, it is. And they're the great ones, isn't it? When you sort of drink beyond drinking, you just get to that stage where you're not getting drunk anymore, you're just drinking.
Yeah.
But of course, it's fairly usual that I'll start at 8 and do, and that's start at 8 and do 2, and that's always a bad sign. The earlier you can stop drinking, the better, isn't it, really?
Yeah, absolutely. Since lockdown, I've been a fairly steady drinker, but I've been a really strict 16:8.
Yeah,
so
that's
I
great.
Stop and go to bed, and that's excellent. But I did have this weekend because I was back doing a comedy on a Friday and a Saturday night.
Yeah.
I was really looking forward, and I didn't have a drink.
Yeah.
And then on we were having one of our favourite kind of brunches on the Sunday, and it goes really nicely with a beer.
Yeah.
So I had a beer at Sunday lunchtime. I say lunchtime, it's more like 1 than 3.
Right, yeah.
And yeah, I had a lovely day on Sunday.
So he was
saying, by the time I went to bed, I'd had a mess of wine. I hadn't had any wine.
So
a million beers and a vodka martini as well.
I love this. So basically we're advocating an early start.
And an early finish.
An early start and an early finish.
No, we're not advocating any of this. It's difficult, but it is. It's that thing. It's very hard not to bust and boom, isn't it? It's like almost like having a dear friend and then shouting them in a rage. You know, it's probably much more sensible to be moderate, but moderation is hard.
Yeah. I think the early finish is better. If I find myself sometimes launching into a movie at 1 in the morning with half a bottle of wine.
I think you did that with that Scorsese movie, which is really long.
Yes.
You had a time when in early lockdown where you were just kind of watching The Irishman. You were watching that sort of most nights.
Seen that film.
You want to go to
times.
Bed now, watch The Irishman again.
I always get up about the same. I'm always up for like 8, half 8.
Yeah, and we've often run. I mean, the thing is, we are. It's not a particularly healthy thing. We're both perfectly happy to get up and run on the hangover and just suffer through.
Yeah.
So we've often. I mean, this podcast wouldn't exist without getting up fairly sharp on that Monday morning.
No.
So the optimal start time, Scott, is not to start. It's not healthy. It's a bad idea. That's what you should have said first. Oh, you take the next one.
Come on, then.
That's a big one from Mo Cusworth. You're fine.
Mo Cusworth.
You're fine.
Now, the possibility of ultras has surfaced. How do you plan to balance a training with family and work commitments? This is something I struggled with. Would thoroughly recommend RTTS. My first ultra, 100 kilometre PB, 14 hours and 29 minutes. Congratulations. Well done.
Well, awesome. I plan to do Race to the Stones. I'm going to do it. And maybe you'll do it too.
Yes. Yeah. And again, it's made easier for us.
This will be easier for us.
Because we don't work during the day.
Yeah.
So we can see Mondays and Tuesdays as like long training days if we want to. We can go and run a long time, and that's
right.
Sufficiently away from any kind of work that's going to be hard.
And as your children get older, they just you're more likely to want to chase them down to spend quality time with you than the other way around.
Yes.
But the main thing is that we don't work 9 to 5, so it isn't as much of an issue for us.
I mean, my kids are all leaving. Anyway, they'll be gone by September. I'll have nothing else to do but just run all day.
I did, when I said about Race to the Stones, I did say to my wife, and she kind of, you know, I sort of consult with her. And of course, she's up, but her concern is more that I'll hurt myself or that I'm overdoing it. It's not because.
We've reached a stage where people are just worried when you say that you want to do certain events. Like my dad's asked.
In case we have a fall.
Yeah, my dad's asked my wife's mum to persuade me not to do the Marathon de Sable. Do you know, we reached at that stage. We come back to our essential. Our essential luck, really, with that respect. We've got the days free a lot during the week, especially early on during the week.
I also like the idea. I mean, I want to, you know, this is the very beginning. We were talking even before we started recording. It's the very beginning of training for ultras in 2022.
Yeah.
but we're in a good position to train. It's going to be okay. Yeah. You know, you've got to be able to see the... on the one hand, you've got to see the magnitude of the entire task.
Yeah.
But you've also got to take it one rung at a time.
Just chunk it down, yeah.
And chunk it down, exactly. It. That's always, the key phrase.
Always with the chunks. Lee Underwood. Hi, Lee. How many 20-mile runs would you do in your marathon training?
I would do one or two, and always have. I think that I do a lot more miles these days, but it's like you were saying, it's better. You can take pressure off the event as long as you've got lots of miles in your legs. Yeah. And some people often say, think more about time than distance, right?
Get
some 3-hour runs
get
in you.
Get your 3-hour runs in, yeah. I mean, I would say if you're going for a time, when I was going for like sub 3, I did like 3 or 4 in the 20-mile zone, and I did a couple just over 20, just sort of breaching into that 22-mile zone.
Where you can see the...
And try to run hard into that. So from about 80 miles, try to increase the effort.
Yeah,
but a couple's more than enough. And you're right, it's time on your feet. Anything between, you know, 2 3/4 and 3 1/4 hours, you're in a really good zone there, training-wise.
Yeah. And talking about being in the zone, you know, no one should go into a marathon taking it lightly and thinking, doing that sort of celebrity thing. People sometimes go, oh, it turned out to be really far. But assuming that you're really committed and you're really careful and you're really training, don't stress it. Stress it. If you think, oh, I was going to do a 20 and a 22, but I only did a 20.
Yeah,
or
yeah,
even, you know,
fine,
one marathon, only once. I'm not saying you should always do it. But one marathon I did, I went out for my long, long training run. And I got lost and I just wasn't feeling it. And I just went home after about 16 miles.
Yeah.
And honestly, I'm not offering that as an answer for life, but I'm just saying it will be okay.
Because I had
a great marathon.
I didn't do any,
I think that was my longest training run, 16 miles.
I mean, there's a simplicity to it. It's like, you get the marathon your training deserves to a certain extent. So, you know, I know club runners who do 20 miles virtually every week, you know. So it's
relative. And it's all relative. Like Michelle Woodcock, when she was getting ready for the 10 in 10, was just running training marathons
all the time. She was running training marathons, which is totally unnecessary if you're just doing a one-off marathon.
And again, going back to you, when you did 3 or 4 and you were getting up to 20, 22 at pace, that's great. But because you were going for sub-3.
Because I was going
If you're planning on getting round, then you don't need to do that.
No, you don't. You absolutely don't. One or two at most, really, for 20 miles, if you just want to get around.
What you're playing for is two things. You want your body to be ready, and you want to have some experience of the idea of what it is to be on your feet for that long, to feel that tired and still be running.
Also be aware as well that the race will feel easier than that. You'll feel better at 20 miles in the race than you will do after 20 miles training, because
you're not on your own.
There's no event. You haven't got the event. You haven't got the adrenaline. You haven't got regular feeding station. Mm-hmm. You've got blood. There's so many different things.
This is interesting because I found just retrospectively, I'm really now, as we train for the London Marathon in October, just realising again how tough that virtual marathon was.
Yeah, totally. It's probably
my hardest marathon I've ever done.
You did it, yeah. This is a question from Lisa Harriet. What are some good targets for older runners? I'm having a problem reading this one. once your original PBs are left behind. Good question. This is basically what my next book's going to be about, really, just sort of the idea of leaving, farewell to speed. I think we're sort of talking about it with the ultras, aren't we, really, I suppose, sort of.
Yep.
Where's your sense of adventure and achievement going to come from? It's always good fun to run as fast as you can, isn't it? Mm. Like when we do like park runs, it's good. You feel it's just nice to run fast, isn't it?
But
your parameter of what success in that has to change as you change. Unless you haven't run at all in your early life, you're not going to get faster in later life. You just not going to do it.
But so. I think it, I also I totally agree. But I also think it's just not nearly as simple as just this sense of a fade.
It's
more that you shift and change. You're going to become stronger in different ways.
It's
like being a musician. You know, if you can play the guitar really well, then when you're 21. You can go like that and be like, you know, I don't know, David Lee Roth. And then when you're older, you probably can't make your fingers do that, but your choice of notes is going to be so good. You'll play guitar like Dave Gilmour in Pink Floyd. That's what we're going to look for. And just to understand that you're a different person and run the best run that person can run.
Yes. Yeah,
if I run a you know, I think my marathons the last couple of years, I've run them better than any marathons I ran when I was younger. Not faster, better.
Yes.
And I want to run one that's as fast as I can possibly do, but if it's Billy's getting having a nibble on Steve, I'm getting sucked by a dog.
He's eating me at this very moment.
Put it down!
But I think you can basically... So if Paula was here, Billy would be a much more obedient dog.
You can have new PBs. Yeah, the run itself becomes a reward, doesn't it? Just the fact that you can run at all becomes a reward.
I think that just sounds like... We're saying, I'm going to go and do an ultra, and I want to go sub 3.5 again in the marathons. You can just reset your PBs.
Yes,
ambitious for a different machine.
Yes, yeah, yeah. I mean, for me, it's more about sort of...
biscuits and sitting down.
No, yeah, if it's more about my groin. No, it's more about embracing a new adventure, you know, just sort of long runs, more adventure runs, hopefully sort of multi-stage runs and stuff. Just really having a laugh with it, really, and just sort of, just new experiences. That's the vibe that I'm after at the moment.
I think they'll all turn out to be aspects of things that were already there. I mean, you saying that sounds great, but also I know it'll be great for you because you've been such a good long and limber. What you were saying earlier about running slow off watch.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. I'd love to do that anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. Just turn it into.
But it's that sort of instead of fighting the aging process, just enjoying it, really, isn't it? And just sort of, I think one thing that we're both doing subtly, and I'm doing a bit more, is honouring running whilst I'm not running. So instead, you know, I used to sort of rely on running to get me out of, you know, I'd just really drink and eat loads, and then I'd go for a run, and it would rescue me from that sort of scenario that I put myself in. But I realise as I get a little bit older that if I want to enjoy my running, I've sort of got to just take it a bit easier when I'm not running as well. Do you know what I mean? It just loses that ability
again,
to sort of transform
running when you're not
me.
Running.
Do you know what I mean? It's sort of... So
it's a strangely late realisation that I think a lot of our listeners are better at, that we're runners all day.
Yeah, totally. So I'm not drinking as much as I used to, and I'm not staying up till 2 and eating loads of cheese. Do you know what I mean?
I think that you can come at that from two directions, because you're talking about living the high life and doing all that stuff. But I also think it works the other way around. There's a lot of these quite specific questions about training. And my journey this last year has been realizing for the millionth time that training is running. Running is training.
Yes.
Do you remember that great conversation about that lovely feeling about getting fit and feeling like the motor of your running engine is running?
Yes.
That when you're fit, your body is like a sports car, and you've left it idling at the side of the road. It's ready.
Yes.
All you've got to do is jump in and put your foot down, you're off. And that's what we're like all the time.
Yeah.
That's not about speed and power. That's about the fact that if you honour your runner, and not just your run, but just your body. If you think about what you put in it and what you do with it and how you feel about it, then there isn't as much difference between times when you are running and times when you're not running. It's just a relationship with the self.
Yeah. No, you're right. But occasionally I can slip into what feels like a bit of an abusive relationship. Do you know what I mean? I just want running to rescue me all the time, and it invariably does. But it's a big ask.
And I think also it's that thing Murakami covers it in different ways, is that you have to recognise, like going back to the one about regrets, that there are disadvantages to having a strong and healthy relationship with exercise in your young life to people who come to it later. If anyone's saying, oh, it's a shame I came to it later, you have to modulate in ways I don't have to modulate because I never used to do any exercise.
Good question, though.
There's a great question, and I think there's a little bit wise there. We should have written some stuff down there for the calendar for next year.
Relationship to the self.
Did I say that?
Yeah.
Okay, there's only 36 questions left. Okay, we're going to bang out these last, there's just a few here, and they're really good. So fast, but good answers. Aid McCordick asks, is it true that if you shorten your stride, you hit your 10,000 steps quicker?
Yes.
I think so.
It is true.
I don't know what that
is. It is true. Interesting, though, in terms of like...
When Nate says your 10,000 steps, seriously, what does that mean?
I don't know. I think 10,000 steps is a sort of base level when people wear Fitbits that they want to hit 10,000 steps, a sort of mythical line of fitness.
What about people dressed as tractors?
No, you're right. He faces a lonely, very difficult journey. It's interesting when you're running, though. He's not asking this question at all, but I'm going to answer the question I want him to answer. if you want to short, fast steps are more biomechanically efficient than long sort of bounding strides. If you want to really, when I was working on trying to run a fast marathon, I was just thinking short, fast steps all the time. The more steps you can get into a minute, the better. And it's just something to think about when you're running. You know, you don't have to force each step much at all. It's just getting that rhythm going.
No, because you can overdo it, because you don't want to end up just literally running on the top, on the spot really, really fast.
getting your short, fast steps. That's and yes, you will get there. You will get there quicker.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. What's your best recovery remedy after a long run, 16-plus miles, says Emma Percy?
Yeah, I tend to, I get inside, I take my shoes off, I go into the kitchen, and I tend to have one of those chocolate sort of malty sports drinks that I'd never drink under normal circumstances. But I think your first half hour after you've had a long run is crucial to get something in your body as quickly as possible. So I do that, and then I'll have a banana, then I'll have a cup of tea. Mm-hmm. I just start refueling and repairing. Yeah,
and start quickly. Refueling by with liquid. So it's absolutely right. You know, any whatever milkshake means to you, sort have of, one of those. Yeah, sort of so you would have shake. A proper milkshake. Some people might have a protein shake. I might have a vegan milkshake. Yeah. I also might have a good creamy alcohol-free beer as long as it's isotonic and actually alcohol-free. Seriously, in this instance.
Yes.
That's the same thing. You're getting some energy in your body because you won't want to eat quite yet.
No. But that's why those sort of protein shakes are found really useful.
And the other thing is, I would say don't sit down. It's lovely to come in and have a meal, but don't be careful of sitting down for half an hour.
I tend to have a bath straight away.
My legs really stiffen up if I come in for a long run and then sit down and don't get up. When I get up, it's a nightmare.
So I tend to just have a bath almost straight away. Come in, protein shake, banana, cup of tea,
nice cold drinks, cold water.
Take some biscuits up, and then have a bath and probably fall asleep.
Yep.
Yeah, and then that's it. You know, you're not going to be the same for the rest of the day, but there's certain things you can do for your body.
Yeah.
But it's that zone of the first half hour. Eat something.
Also, this is again another one. The question wasn't there, but we should say it. Don't worry if you find that you're. This is something we totally got from Michelle, basically. But if you find you're training hard, you expect to get a good night's sleep, but you've got like restless legs and you don't sleep very well at all. That's another way your body chooses to repair itself.
So don't
stress about it, because
sometimes I find when I'm training hard, my legs just hurt too much.
Yeah,
to sleep well. Do you know
I have near permanent the backs of my legs just kind of seize up in the night now, right. And I wake up in the morning and I go kind of with my legs or during the night. It's ridiculous. Okay, a couple of questions there. Thanks, Emma. Good question.
Thank you.
Now the date, I think we've covered this, so we'll see. Now the date's been released for Race of the Stones next year. Are you guys going to sign up? I just think it would make an amazing episode or two. That's Phil Bennett.
We're going to do that.
But we'll record the whole thing, so that'll be a 15-hour episode.
Yeah, that'd be good, yeah. we'll release it over,
we need some battery
over 3
packs.
Months. Yeah.
Penultimate question.
Penultimate. If you were to start your own pack run, where would it be and what would the course be like?
Adam Riley asked this.
Adam Riley, thank you, Adam.
Clissold Park, 3 times round.
Yeah, they tried to do that, didn't they? And they couldn't get people to do it, which is maybe because there's one so close at Highbury. I'd probably do Wetlands. I'd probably do it 10 times over Wetlands, just to annoy them.
They call it the bird kill.
Just to
kill
really,
the birds.
Really
kill the birds. Or the Parkland Walk.
Parkland Walk would be good.
If you start at the bottom and come back down, it'd be great for the old splits because it's slightly uphill.
Mm.
How far is it? 2.2 miles. So you could basically, if you set it up on it,
you'd have a little run round Finsbury first, a little half mile loop, and then
not just there and back. I mean, you just meet on that big broad bridge above the Laundrette.
And
go northwest for 2.5k straight back again.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
We should do that now. Should we go and do it? No, not with your groin.
My groin. Meg Daintith.
This is the final question.
Yeah, any tips on Paul about returning to running after COVID?
Oh, well, that's interesting.
What do you reckon? You haven't had COVID yet, have you?
No. I didn't.
Feeling like you missed out.
You're trying to have a laugh here, but you know what I didn't like about what you just said?
What?
Yet.
No, I know various people have never got it. Good luck to them. I managed to get double vaxxed and have it. I got it very mildly. I actually think I went for a couple of runs when I had it without realising, to be honest. I got it so mildly. Mm. I would say, I know a couple of people have had longish, who had longish COVID but have now fully recovered, you've just got to take it easy. It's easy to think, again, it's like that returning from injury thing, isn't it? It's easy to think that you're back when you might not be. I know people who felt that they'd recovered from it, went for long runs, long cycle rides, and it set them back for like 2 weeks. So just take it very, very, just take it really gradually.
And you have and listen to your body.
Yeah,
exactly.
Totally.
I think that, I don't know much about this, but from what little anecdotal stuff I've heard, I think that there's, if you have got long COVID, never mind like coming back from an initial hit, if you're dealing with long COVID and it's one of those ones, the people I know are dealing with the massive loss of energy.
Yeah.
So even if they're fine with breathing, they just get very tired. Yeah. I think it's worth recognising that there's two things at play there. One, you get very tired. And two, stress exacerbates it.
Mm.
So you'll probably be really impatient and really kind of grumpy with it. But if you feel too tired to run, you've got to not do it because you'll make it worse.
Yeah, you've just got to not run. I was very, very lucky with my skirmish with the COVID because I'd been vaccinated previously only by about 7-8 days or whatever, but it did feel it gave me an advantage. I don't know, I was a little bit fit going into it as well, whether that had a factor, I don't know, but I did, you know, I was running very quickly after it and I was fine. I was very, very, very lucky. Just got to listen to your body and don't rush back too quickly.
And in the wider scheme of things, it is a bit of a thing, isn't it, that in the world, that the expectation that everyone's either had it or they're going to have it. It makes it, you know, it makes the Deering style existence pretty lonely. The kind of still semi-locked down, trying to avoid it at all costs thing. It's kind of fallen out of fashion, isn't it?
Yeah, it's sort of, I don't know, I think it's something that most people are going to get and it's going to be pretty mild, if they're vaccinated, especially. So, good luck with that. Good luck with that. And because I don't know Meg's history. I imagine she's had it and she's sort of wondering. But
I'm reminded of Kath's story, who we followed with interest because she had the idiot who came to work with it, coughed on her and gave it to her, and she was just getting into running and she was really ill with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, awful story, really, although she told it with in an upbeat way.
Mm.
Anyway, but she's back, you know, she's feeling better, she's running, she's got a 5K up, she's doing good times. So it did, like you say, you can come through.
It's quite a nice question to end on, really, because we're chatting initially about how things are opening up and things are sort of, life's returning to normal at its own pace, and some people are really frenzied with it and some people aren't, and it's just
and getting philosophical about it, and it is, you have to listen to yourself, you've got to go easy and also recognise that whatever it is, not in a negative way, it's never a return. We're always moving forward into whatever we're going to do next, whether it's running as a slightly older person, coming back from injury, coming back from illness, or just coming into a new phase, finding that you used to want to do this and now you want to do that. People might be running in different ways because they've got different jobs or because they've moved house. Just recognize that things change all the time.
And just keep listening and
keep your kind of feet on the ground.
The only constant is change.
Plus ça change.
Be the change you want to see in the world.
Plus c'est la même chose.
Yeah. To improve is to change, to perfect is to change constantly. House of cards. Have you got any change? Me in 6 months. Some things have changed. Some haven't.
Constant change is here to stay.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of more. Thank you so much for your questions. I can't believe we don't get to do this now till next year.
That was really, really nice. We pump them out every year. And hopefully this time next year, I won't be injured. We'll have done Race of the Stones. I'll have done Marathon of the Sable. We'll have had a commission for another book. Paula and Stevie will be back in full effect.
If you missed the window and you have got any questions that you wanted to ask, too late, bad luck.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.